The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes. Hello. Coming to you cordless. It's Tuesday night, April 23rd, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis, coming to you live, it's 10 p.m. Central Daylight Time. I am Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters Tonight. It's episode number 1010. I sound like Biden there for a second. It's episode number 110, if you're keeping score at home. I hope you guys had a nice weekend. Now, of course, we did not have a show last night. I forgot to actually post a notice in our blog. I mean, I've been talking about this for about a week, but still, I forgot to do it. My apologies. We didn't have a show last night because we upgraded some equipment here in our studio. Specifically, you know how it says on the intro to our show that we're coming to you cordless? Now we're coming to, it sounds like a breakfast commercial. We're coming to you with fiber because we upgraded the internet in our studio to gigabit internet fiber optic. Yeah, we did. Yeah, you got photons going through tiny little wires. Yeah, it's amazing. So the bottom line is what that happened is that we have doubled our download speed. But the real incredible thing is we basically, with fiber optic cable, your upload speed and download speed are basically the same. So our upload speed, which is very important because we're transmitting video, went up by like 20 times. No freaking lie. Unbelievable. Now, we never had any problem with this before. We were running regular coax internet from the Xfinity people, you know, that's a made-up word, but whatever. And they were fine. They were okay. But this is balls to the walls, and it was really cool. So I spent most of yesterday testing this shit out and making sure everything worked. There's a lot of stuff to set up. I mean, you don't even want to know. So anyway, I mean, at 11 o'clock last night, which would have been 1 hour after we would have started here, I was still working. Yeah, that's my problem. I know. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Okay. So what's going on here? I'll tell you. We got a lot. It's going. We got it going on, folks. I'll tell you. First of all, our apologies. Our scheduled guest tonight was Ed Morrissey, the managing editor of hotair.com. He had a family emergency. He couldn't make it. He begged off. We've already rescheduled him for May 21st. So he will be coming back in 3 weeks. Our thoughts go out to him, he had a bolt at the last minute. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, we have Bruce Solheim coming on. Bruce is an author. He's written 9 books. Actually, he's actually even written a couple graphic novels too. So, I mean, it's even more than 9 books. He's a college professor. He's an active member of the military, and he's also works as a defense contractor consultant. And why is that important? That's important because he says he's been in touch with extraterrestrials since he was a little kid. And also, the thing I'm really interested in talking about him here, his latest book is called We Are the Aliens. And that book is about the fact that the aliens have told him that basically they have genetically re-engineered intelligent life on Earth. So that we're partly a product of them. That's what he says. He also says he has a lot of inside information from this. No, I shouldn't say that. He doesn't actually say that. I'm curious to find out if he knows anything because he's a defense contractor. Now, we got a story in part 3 tonight. We actually got some UFO news that's both kind of shocking and also kind of like stupid at the same time. Regarding the government, of course. But I'll be curious to see what Bruce has to say about this whole thing. I've read the book. It's very interesting. Some of it you would find hard to buy. I admit that. It's like, you know, and I give this as an open forum. I let people talk. I let them tell their stories. I don't try to pass judgment. Some of it is not is kind of hard to believe. But that said, that's what he says, you know, and he has the guts to come out and say it, because God knows, I mean, most people, you know, especially let's talk about our guest on Thursday, Kathleen Martin. Now, she's very well known in the UFO community. She's one of the premier researchers. And the reason she got started on this is because she is the niece of Betty Hill, of Betty and Barney Hill fame. This is on Thursday. So if you're into the UFO thing, you got two nights of particular cool stuff ahead of you. And also the end of this show, which is, like I said, I'm going to tell you kind of a ridiculously shocking story. And that's actually in the news. If you're the following the UFO thing. But Kathleen was 16 when she said that her and her aunt's husband, her uncle, Barney Hill, were abducted by aliens in 1961. She was 16 years old. And listening to her aunt and helping her aunt navigate basically her life story basically led Kathleen into, she is a professional UFO researcher. Now, there's two things regarding this. So the one we definitely want to talk to her about, because she touched on this in her book, but didn't explain it in detail. She says that shortly after Betty and Barney were abducted, the U.S. government came to Betty and asked her to participate in a program where they had people across the country, the United States, American citizens, contact extraterrestrials. And according to Kathleen, they were successful. This is in 1962. According to Kathleen, this study was led by the government. They were doing it, and they didn't know what was going to happen. And so Betty was involved in that. And then also the reason this book is kind of important is because Kathleen says she's kept this to herself for like 40 years, but she says that she too has been in contact with extraterrestrials. Well, her house, apparently where she grew up, and I think it's Louisiana. No, it isn't. It's New Hampshire. What am I talking about? Because that's where she grew up in New Hampshire, basically in the house next door to her aunt and uncle. But even though the houses were separated by like 250 yards. And she said that during this study that Betty was involved in, that a flying saucer basically landed in the field between their houses. And from that point on, Kathleen said she has been in touch with ET, and she's never talked about it because she's afraid it would have damaged her reputation in the UFO community. And that's understandable too, because there's, you know, it's like, I've talked about this in the Bigfoot community. There's two factions of what Bigfoot is. You have Bigfoot being an undiscovered primate, which is highly plausible. That's the thing. People say they don't believe in Bigfoot. I'm not saying Bigfoot's real, but the story that Bigfoot, or the idea, conception, that Bigfoot is an undiscovered primate is highly plausible. Point. Gorillas were not confirmed to exist till 1855. The giant squid was rumored for 2,000 years before they finally caught one in 2006. 2006, less than 20 years ago. They finally caught this creature, this animal that people for 2,000 years were talking about. Sailors were talking about it and talking about it. No one believed them. No one ever, you know, they saw it. No one else saw it. Well, you have to be out in the middle of the ocean to see one. But those things were confirmed. So you had an undiscovered primate, you know. And matter of fact, it's called Geopithecus or something like that. There's even a... There is a, not a rumor, but a theory of what Bigfoot, exactly what kind of primate Bigfoot is. And that's fine. And so, you know, we had a Bigfoot panel on the show, I think November, I think it was. And all three members of the panel, I asked them about this. I said, do you buy any of the paranormal stuff about Bigfoot? All of them said no. They said, no, Bigfoot is an undiscovered primate. We just haven't caught one yet. Now, my friend Larry Newman, who comes on the show regularly, Matter of fact, he's part of the month in review panel on next Monday. He's also a certified Bigfoot investigator. How do you get certified? Well, he was enlisted by the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, which is the major Bigfoot study group in the United States. It's kind of the Bigfoot version of MUFON, kind of, sort of. And they wanted him because he was a police investigator. So he understood police investigative procedure. He understood unbiased investigative procedure, and they wanted somebody like that. And at that time, according to Larry, he did not buy the existence of Bigfoot at all. He was highly skeptical. He thought, this is bullshit. I'm just going to go do my job. They're asking me to do this. I'm going to do it. That's fine. And Larry said he ended up out in the woods in the Ozarks looking through an infrared camera. He watched a family, a mama, papa, and baby Bigfoot walking around for an hour. He said it didn't see with their naked eye. It was pitch black, pitch dark. But through they could see it through the clearly through the infrared camera. And he said that's what sold him on the fact that Bigfoot is real. Now, we've also had Stan Gordon on this show. And Stan is one of the premier UFO and Bigfoot researchers in America. I remember I had to book him like 5 months ahead of time. That's how, and he couldn't appear via camera. He came on via telephone. It was audio. But Stan says he's been investigating this for 40 years and that he's convinced that there's some paranormal aspect to Bigfoot. And there's a lot of other people who see the same thing. But that's, of course, when you get into the crazy tinfoil hat theory, which, of course, I'm wearing this very moment. No, it's not so much that I believe all this stuff. It's that I don't discount it. I don't. I have seen working. I do not call myself a journalist, but I was the editor-in-chief of Calling News for like 3 years. And I've edited magazines and stuff like that. I do not consider myself a journalist, maybe an editor. Okay, fine. I'll cop to that. But I have heard over the last few years some of the craziest shit that you can imagine that turned out to be true. And that's one of the reasons, you know, king of conspiracies. No, that's the reason. There is so much stuff that people write off as complete tinfoil crap bullshit that is actually true. That's the problem. You know, I mean, I said that if you looked at it, we put up a new about page on our website at jimandnight.com. One of the things I said in there that's the problem with being a conspiracy theorist is that all of a sudden, all these conspiracy theories seem to be coming true. Like, okay, for 30 years, I'm talking on the radio and basically to anybody who will listen, I'm talking about the fact that the UFOs are real. I'm laughed at, blah, 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 blah. You know, you're crazy, you're nuts, you know. Yeah. And then in December 2017, the government admits, well, yeah, the UFOs are real. We don't know what they are. And like I said in that page, I have people that won't talk to me anymore because of this, because they were making merciless fun of me, and I turned out to be right. Now, the weird thing is about that wasn't speculation. The reason I knew that was true is because of unclassified government documents. And like I said in that page too, the problem, and then the next question everyone asked was, well, if you know about it, how come the press wasn't reporting it? And my answer to that is, that's a goddamn good question. I do not know. I mean, I'm, you know, some stupid guy in Minneapolis is working his underwear. I figured this out, you know, and there's other, you know, Jazz Shaw comes on the show regularly. He figured it out. We're putting together a UFO panel similar to the Bigfoot panel, and Jazz is doing this for us, and this is very cool. So we're going to have two other people on there, and the two other people that I don't want to announce it yet, they're quite prominent. So, you know, but they know about this. They saw this too. You know, you saw these documents. Well, how come the press isn't reporting this? Now, my speculation is I think they were paid not to. There's actual evidence that I have, not evidence that's been confirmed, verified, that in the 1970s that happened already, that there was something called Project Nightingale, where the CIA paid off 400 of the most prominent journalists in America to not report stories. They didn't actually ask them to lie. The idea was don't report on this, you know, all sorts of stuff. But the implication is the UFO thing was part of that. And so, you know, and that's been verified. That's there's government documents that talk about that. That's been declassified, that people have gone through the Freedom of Information Act. So anyway, where I'm going with this is that Kathleen Martin says she's been talking to ETs basically since she was a teenager. And yeah, I understand what her reticence is, because yeah, you can blow, you know, if you have any sort of career going, and she does, I mean, she's all over the place, you know, at UFO conventions and giving speeches, all sorts of stuff, you know. She's the primary investigator and the only person alive left, really, from her aunt and uncle's case. So, you know, she's quite prominent. And matter of fact, we're very lucky to have her. I'm kind of admit, I'm kind of astonished she agreed to come on the show, but I thought the same thing about Stan Gordon and Mark Morano and a bunch of other people, too. We are definitely batting above our pay grade when it comes to guests. There's no doubt about that. So anyway, she's coming on Thursday. So both Bruce tomorrow and Kathleen Thursday are two people who say they've talked to extraterrestrials. So we'll find out what's going on. Like I said, I've heard so much crazy shit that turned out to be true. At this point, I believe almost anything. So, you know, you won't hear me arguing with them. That's the only thing. I'm not gonna say, you know, doubt them, because that's not what this is about here. I want them to tell the story. You can make up your own mind. You don't need me, a filter, to tell you what's true and what isn't. You don't. You know, I actually think you're smart. I appreciate you watching the show. I'm not like CNN. There's a rumor going around. I'm getting off subject here, but, you know, I got an outline about stuff to talk about. This isn't on the outline, but I'm going to bring this up. There's a rumor going around that Chris Cuomo is going to go back to CNN. Because they're desperate. I mean, they are. They're not even cracking a half a million viewers anymore. And, you know, I've told you this before. In the cable television business, anything under a million viewers is nothing. Nobody's watching. And literally, nobody's watching CNN. Now, you know, 400,000 people are watching at any time. But that's nothing in that business. That's so low, it isn't even worth the trouble. And so they're desperate. At this point, they're desperate. The ship is going down. And they know it. So, you know, they're thinking, well, okay, and they tried this thing with King Charles. Well, first of all, it was only once a week. That's stupid. You know, Gayle King and Charles Barkley, which, you know, now I saw a few minutes of this, and it was a pretty good matchup. I mean, they had some chemistry, you know, but still, first of all, it's only once a week, you know. And it's not like Rachel Maddow, who was on the air for years, and she's now doing once a week, and Jon Stewart's now doing once a week. But they have legacy. They did it 5 days a week or 4 days a week, really, for ages. So, you know, they got some legacy there. You know, they put the show on once a week and they're expecting. What were they expecting? I mean, shit, you know. I mean, it's all okay. It's all right, you know. And right now, and, you know, I'm privy to this and party of it. You know, the American public is deluged in content. I mean, there's so much stuff to watch. Now, there's another thing, too, interesting. About the fact that the streaming services are going to hell too. Other than Netflix, Netflix is making money. They're doing well. All the other ones are losing money hand over fist. And I'm talking about Disney. I'm talking about Paramount Plus. I'm talking about Max. All of them. They're all losing their shirts. You know, because that is there's literally too much to watch. And then here's the hilarious part. On the study just came out about last viewership last year. On the streaming services, the shows that people are watching the most are all old rerun legacy shows, Grey's Anatomy, Friends. These are the shows that people are watching. I saw the list of the top 10. Only two of those shows were originally produced by the streaming services. I can't remember what they were. Oh, I do remember the most watched original show by far is Ted Lasso, which is on Apple Plus. Which not a lot of people subscribe to, but it really blew the, you know, and I've never seen this show, but people say it's fantastic. And that Jason Sudeikis does a fantastic job with this guy. He's basically brought in to literally tank a soccer team. And I think they're in England, if I'm right, and he's American or something like that. And the opposite happens. He actually, they end up doing really well. And that's what the show's about. And apparently, it's just fantastic, and that was the most watched streaming show of last year that was not a legacy broadcast television rerun. So nobody's watching anything. It's really terrible. And then there's an article in Breitbart today, if you want to go see it and chase it down, where Jerry Seinfeld has gone on the record. He says the movie industry's dead. You know, he has a movie coming up on Netflix called Unfrosted, which is it's about the making of Pop-Tarts, the invention of Pop-Tarts in the 1960s. And it's a comedy, apparently, as you might imagine. And Jerry not only stars in it, it's the first movie he's directed. But he says he figured out, you know, while doing this, he says he realized now the movie industry is actually dead. Nobody wants to watch the movies anymore, and they have no cultural relevance anymore. And they don't. They don't. I mean, and maybe is that because we're not all watching the same thing? I don't know. You know, I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy times, folks. It is crazy times. And so because of that crazy time, so in view of the fact that Ed Morrissey was going to be on the show tonight, and one of the reasons I asked him back, and this was, if you go back to his appearance, I can't remember when it was, January, I think it was. If you go back on Rumble into our archives and look at that show, we had a fantastic interview, but the real amazing thing that stuck in my head is at the very end, we were talking about the war in Ukraine. And here's my deal on the war in Ukraine, and this is the reason you might notice this. I never talk about it. I don't talk about it because I literally don't know what to think. I don't. I see the two sides of this very, very clearly. One is if Ukraine falls, there's a good possibility that Russia will try to expand and take over another country. Now, that's a distinct possibility. The other is we have been in forever wars forever. I mean, God, you can just go back and name them. Like, all the way back to Korea. I mean, it's like we just get in these wars and we never really win, and we never really look at Afghanistan. We just left. And, of course, Biden completely fucked that up. I mean, just totally. And the real amazing thing is he says, no, 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 no. We were right to leave. But the thing is, no, that wasn't the problem. It's like I know there's people we can have a debate on whether we should have left there or not. Totally. And that's totally legit. That wasn't the problem. The way is how you did it, asshole. It's like you complete, I mean, 13 American soldiers got killed. We've left still, and they're still there. We've left well over 100 American citizens in Afghanistan. Who the fuck knows what's happened to them? We never got them out. We promised hundreds of Afghanis who helped us over the years that we would get them out of the country. We never did. I mean, it was just a complete, utter debacle. And then there's those pictures of Afghani citizens literally hanging onto the airplanes while they're taking off. And they fell off and died. I mean, it was mind-boggling awful. And he has the gall to say it was an unqualified success. He's actually said that more than once, you know. He said another thing. He was in Tampa today. And it's another thing on the outline, too, about the fact, you know, I've talked about this. I've been talking about this since 2020. I've been talking about this at Kong News, on our radio shows. I've been talking about it here, about the fact that I have evidence that the 2020 election was, it maybe not cheated, but, well, it was rigged for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But nobody seems to talk about this. Nobody ever shows up to hear Joe Biden talk. Nobody ever shows up to see him in person, ever. You look at like last week or was it the week before, Trump goes to this bodega in Harlem. Hundreds of people lined up to get a glimpse of him. I mean, it was pandemonium. It was nuts. The next day in Scranton, Pennsylvania, Biden goes to a gas station convenience store. There's like seven people there and nobody wants to talk to him. I mean, people are literally avoiding him. I mean, it's like, it's mind-boggling. Last week or the week before, Jill Biden went to California. Was it California or was it Louisiana? Well, she went somewhere for a fundraiser. I think it was California. 30 people showed up for the fundraiser. This guy, nobody comes out to see this guy. Nobody. Now, the country is, what is it? The Constitution was ratified in 1892, right? Okay. George Washington was the first president in 1792 to 1800, 1792. to 1800, okay? Those two elections were not contested. As a matter of fact, they were run by Congress. If I'm correct, I can't quote this, but the Constitution set up so that the first president to get the ball rolling would be elected by Congress and not the people. From that point on, it would be the people. But it was the first one. So Congress unanimously in 1792 appointed George Washington president. And then they renewed him for a second term. And then he decided not to run for a third term, even though at that time there was nothing in the Constitution that said that he couldn't, that he declined. And, you know, this is kind of lost in history, but he was a beloved figure in America. But by the time he was done with his second presidential term, 8 years later, Congress hated his guts. I mean, that's one of the reasons he quit. I mean, all that goodwill that he had built up over the years had dissipated. People really, really pissed at him. And why? He did a pretty good job. That's a really amazing thing, you know, but people get mad about everything. You know, you got 435 people you're trying to please. Try that, you know. I mean, you're lucky you can please half of them. And that's actually my point here. So here's my point. The first real presidential election was 1800, for the first one where the public voted. And that was John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. And Adams won. So in 1800, there were 15 million people in the United States. There's over 20 times that now, okay? We have 20 times more people. That's only about 5% of the current American population, right? But I swear to God, Adams and Jefferson drew more people to their campaign events than Biden did in 2020. I mean, seriously, I've said this before, and you can, you know, I spent a lot of time documenting this to make certain it was correct. With one exception, 5 days before the 2020 election in Pennsylvania, where Biden drew 900 people, he did not draw more than 200 people at any campaign event during the entire campaign. Maximum 200. Matter of fact, most of the time, there were so few people at those events that the press couldn't tell who the public was and who the staff was and who the other press people were. And there was nobody showed up for any of it, Meanwhile, Trump is drawing an average of 20,000 people at every campaign event. This is crazy. He's the president of the United States. Now he's still president. People still don't come to see him. And so anyway, he's in Florida today, and he's talking about abortion, and, you know, they're trying to pin the fact that Roe versus Wade disappeared on Trump and all that shit. It's just, it's constitutional stuff, and nope, they don't, you know, so they're just lying. But the real amazing thing is at one point he says, I want to make sure I get this right, he said, Donald Trump shows us that we can't be trusted. He didn't say he said we. That Donald Trump shows us that we can't be trusted. Hilarious. Just hilarious. The guy can't talk. You know, and here's the deal, and I've said this last week too. This is really important. If Biden was even doing an excellent job, if he was a brilliant president, all right, I can go back before Reagan, after Reagan, I think we've only had two brilliant presidents, Clinton and Trump. I got another thing about Clinton here too that I want to talk to you about. Okay, so right, you got, you know, those guys, and, you know, you could say Trump wasn't brilliant, but I would say he was brilliant under the circumstances. I mean, this guy was just pummeled by the press and everybody, and he still got quite a lot of positive things done, and Clinton did too. And it's amazing, Clinton was also pummeled by not just the Republicans, by his own party, because they thought he was too centrist. But Biden was actually brilliant, he still should not be running for president. I mean, he is so physically incapacitated at this point, he should not be running. He can't talk. The guy cannot talk. He can't put words together. He slurs his speech. Jimmy Fallon from Fox News caught the same thing I did when they released Biden's first campaign ad for this campaign. And that is, it wasn't that he was slurring his speech during the narration. He doesn't actually appear in the ad, but he narrates it. The problem is that, you know, if you know anything about show business, which is what all this stuff is, and I've always said campaigning is show business. I think one of the reasons that Trump's so good at it, I mean, he had, you know, he has a significant experience on television, that Biden got an unlimited number of takes to do this. And that's the best one they could come up with. And I'm sure they pieced it together. They edited it together from a whole bunch of takes that he did. And it was still awful. And Phalo, he brought the same thing up on Fox News. I mean, I talked about it here, and then he brought it up too. He noticed. And he's the only other person I've heard that noticed other than me. And he's absolutely right. I mean, the thing is, at some point, I'm sure they just said, well, thank you, Mr. President. That's good enough. We got the, because they knew they couldn't get it any better, that he couldn't do it. So his perfect take, which was, like I said, I'm sure is edited, but from a whole bunch of takes. I mean, people are really good at this, can literally edit single words. So I guess that they probably didn't go to that extent, but I'm sure they did for sure. That they put this tape together, this narration together, and it still sucked. The guy can't talk, you know. And just what I said just now, this example in Tampa, you know, Donald Trump showed us that we can't be trusted. Yeah, right. Now, I will cut Biden some slack here because, you know, he's talking about his uncle being eaten by cannibals and all this stuff about the thing about riding the train to Scranton, and it turned out that the conductor retired and all that. You know, there's so many of his familial stories that are they're bullshit. But those aren't substantive lies to me. I don't talk about this shit. If you watch the show before, I don't really talk about this stuff. It's same with Trump. Trump is a salesman. Trump's constantly exaggerating and trying to sell shit. I mean, that's his DNA. That's what he does. So, yeah, he has lied through exaggeration a whole shitload. But is it pertinent to anything? That's the point. Does it involve policy? Does it involve the actual job of president? You know, I don't really care if Biden fucks up the story about his uncle being cannibals. I really don't. It doesn't matter. You know, and not to mention the fact maybe it's entertaining. There's a whole bunch of people who are good speakers. Biden is not one, has never been one either. That's the other thing. But, you know, who will exaggerate just to entertain a crowd, you know? So I won't, you know, that's speaking and that's show business, and I don't have any problem with that. Even though I think in Biden's case, I think the fact that he does this so often at this point reflects on his general mental state. But the actual stuff he's actually saying, I don't really give a crap. But when he starts talking about the fact that, you know, that Donald Trump rescinded Roe versus Wade, well, that's complete, utter bullshit. that's a substantive lie, and that's wrong. I mean, it's, you know, he may have pointed the judges that did it, but no, Donald Trump did not do that, you know. And also, once those judges are appointed, they think for themselves. We all know that. Well, we should anyway. Anybody should know. Hold on. The problem with doing the show nonstop. Okay, so I got on this tangent because they're going to say, so Ed Morrissey gave this incredibly eloquent explanation when he was on the show the first time, was like I said, January, I think it was, about the war in Ukraine. Because like, I told him at that time, which I was telling you, I don't know what to think. You know, on the one hand, yeah, maybe we need to do this. We can fight Putin by proxy. On the other hand, is it just another war we're going to end this is going to go on forever? It's starting to look that way, too. But at any rate, Ed gave a very, very eloquent explanation of why. Well, first of all, he said, and it's true, I didn't remember this, that years ago, I think being in the 1990s, I think it was, I forgot to tell you, you can call me. You see there's numbers here at the bottom of the screen. Right here. You want to call me with a camera? You go there. Now, this is a little odd. I know. It's a web page. You go to that web page and click on a button, and that will connect the webcam connected to your device to our studio. Got that? That's the way this works. That's the reason we make it so simple. You don't have to download any software or any of that crap. You go to that web page, GemiKnight.com/call, and you click the big blue button at the top of the screen, and that will connect your webcam and the mic on your computer to our virtual studio. Got it? And then you end up in the queue, and I put your picture up. Now that's actually the scary part. I think a lot of people don't want to do that. They don't want to have their picture on the broadcast. Okay, fine. If that's the case, then you can call this number, 563-999-3435, and join in via phone. You can do that. Also, you can text us here at this number, 408-458-5088, and we get the text in real time. Again, I'm on a there's a side monitor here where they show up. So Morsi was talking about the fact that in the 1990s, we basically promised Ukraine we would defend them in exchange for them not developing nuclear weapons. And that's true. We did. So in some ways, we owe them. So they never did develop nuclear weapons. So we're, you know, he pointed out, first of all, we're basically, we told them we would protect them, you know, even though they're not part of NATO. So there's that. Now, the thing about, you know, there's the, you know, I was watching Dana Lash yesterday, and, you know, she talked about this, about what's called the domino effect. And this is what was going on during the Vietnam War. For those of you who are too young to remember this, you know, I'm fucking old as a hill, but I was around and I remember. The domino effect was, so North and South Vietnam were fighting each other. North Vietnam was communist. South Vietnam was not capitalist. There was and of course North Vietnam was being supported by Russia and China, and there was the feeling that, well, if South Vietnam fell, it would basically communism would spread around that region, that like dominoes, literally one country after the other would fall. Kind of sort of the theory right now. There's people think that if Putin takes Ukraine outright, it will just go off, especially Poland, it seems to be the logical target. It will go off to Poland. It will start actually trying to gobble up more smaller countries in that region. That is the feeling. Now, here's the deal with the domino effect. It's never actually happened. You know, we didn't know this in the 1960s, but North Vietnam, after we left Vietnam, North Vietnam very quickly won that war. They won it. And South Vietnam became, at least at that time, communist. And they never did go, it never happened, the domino effect never actually happened. No one in that region ever went off to try to conquer another country. That's the one thing. Historically, the domino effect doesn't happen at all. So everyone's saying, well, why would it happen now? Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I literally don't know. You know, but, you know, so then the question is, too, are we just starting another forever war? And it doesn't increasingly appear that way. It does. So Marco Rubio said today, you know, he did not vote for this. And he called it legislative blackmail, that the fact that that basically if he said that if the Democrats said, if you don't vote for this, you know, we're never going to support anything regarding border security or anything like that. And of course, there's some in this massive bill, there's some, apparently they restored some of the things the Democrats wanted in the original border security bill, which was complete utter bullshit. Totally. Then the other thing you got going on here is Mike Johnson. He's the Speaker of the House. So there's people who say, matter of fact, the quote I have right here is from Jim Banks, who says he's never seen a bigger flip-flop in politics than Mike Johnson, who apparently sold the store. That's the way it looks anyway. Now, the thing is, there's people who say, you know, they go, the SCIF, and I can't remember, SCIF stands for specially contaminated, I can't remember, investigative forum or something like that. A SCIF is a room in the Capitol or, you know, in Washington where that is completely hermetically sealed off from any or radio transmission or anything. And that's where congressmen go to look at highly classified material. Now, they can only look at it. They can read it. They're supervised while they're there, which is a really weird thing because Biden ended up with some of this material while he was senator, which means he had to he stole it. That's what it means, because there's no other way you can get it. Matter of fact, that you're as a general rule, if you're a congressman, your staff can't even go in the skiff. You have to go in yourself. You can't take any pictures. You know, you have to leave your cell phone at the door, all sorts of shit like that. So there's a lot of people, the way this works is that, you know, if you want someone to turn somebody's mind, they send them to the skiff, and then they look at supposed classified documents, which are complete doom and gloom for America, and it changes your mind. That seems to be the theory and seems to be the practical application of this whole thing. So there are a lot of people who think this is what happened to Johnson, that Johnson was completely against this Ukraine funding thing until he went into a skiff and got some classified information and changed his mind. Now, we don't know what the classified information is, but the question is, what it would be so bad, you know? I think it's fear-mongering, basically, is what it is, as far as I can tell. It's professional fear-mongering. You know, the FBI or the CIA, you know, they put out stuff, well, if you don't do this, not only is Ukraine going to fall, but the Russians will end up launching nukes somewhere, you know. It's like, and then they lay out a course of action that seems plausible and probably actually is, you know. And, well, are we going along with the program or not, you know. So people are kind of shocked that Johnson seems to have done a complete 180 on his previous opinions on what's going on here. And there's a lot of people who think that he's been completely mesmerized by power, which does happen to people, a lot of people, a lot. So I don't, you know, and the thing is, I literally don't know. I mean, I can tell you, you know, what other people are saying. I do not know. I'm not going to sit here and tell you something that I don't know. So I have no real idea what's going on here at all. And it appears nobody else does either. That's the thing. You hear two different things from Congress, from congressmen. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene is she is actively promoting the idea of vacating Johnson as the speaker. Now, they've done that like twice in, what, 8 months? You know, I mean, shit. You know, and at this point, and they have a one-person majority in the House, one single person. I can make an argument that Johnson has absolutely no leeway and nothing to work with. I could make that argument. And there's other people who are saying that too, that, you know, you got to cut the guy some slack. It's the smallest majority ever in history of the United States House of Representatives. One person. Well, it's technically three, I think, but because of the way the votes, they have a one vote advantage. So, you know, what can you accomplish? You know, the only thing with that one single vote, the only thing they get is they get to head all the committees. That's the one thing. And that's actually really important. But seriously, if they lose two people, they lose, you know? So there were 101 congressmen that voted for the Ukraine package. And what was it, like 190 voted against, I think? I'm talking about Republicans now. All of the Democrats voted for it, every single one. And they're really good at voting in a block. They don't lose people, you know, but sometimes I think that the Republicans, you know, conservative by nature, are kind of like more independently minded, and they're going to do what they want to do. So I don't know. My point, I don't talk about this because I don't know what to think. I don't. So I want to get Ed back on here to talk to him about it some more. Because it seems like, especially with what's going on right now, I thought it would be particularly good, and he agreed to do it. But like I said, at the last minute, he couldn't. So he's coming back, and he's going to come on in 3 weeks. Who knows what's going to happen then? But seriously, it's just like, I don't know what to think of this, you know? So the other thing that's going on right now, I don't have to tell you, and that is that all across America at college campuses, there's protests about the Israeli-Hamas war. And those brilliant, brilliant college kids have decided that Israel is on the wrong and that they're going to support Hamas. And let me say this again, there's nothing funnier than the oxymoron of Queers for Palestine. if you were a queer in Palestine, well, you'd probably be alive like 3 days tops, because Hamas does not like queer people. They don't. And, you know, the fact that you're so stupid to figure that out, I mean, you know, it's been brought up. Israel has all the right. First of all, it's one of the most gay-friendly countries in the world, let alone just in the Middle East. It is. And so you got that, and then you got Hamas, who throws gay people off of the tops of buildings, literally kills them. And then you have, and so now you have queers for Palestine. That's really good. That's these kids, and I'm going to call them kids, are so fucking stupid. It's mind boggling. And like, who was I listening to recently? Who was saying that, you know, some people, the kids would like to compare themselves to what happened in the 1960s during the Summer of Love. You know, and that's the other thing too. Was it Bill Maher's already predicting, but I predicted it before he did. And that is at the Democratic National Convention in August, there's going to be huge riots, just like they were in 1968. But here's the difference. And the difference is huge. In 1968, the kids then were protesting the Vietnam War. Number one, a bunch of their cohorts, a bunch of their peers were going off to war and getting killed. And a bunch. We lost 55,000 people in that war. 55,000. Got it? Right? Okay, so there's that alone. Secondly, it's just the fact that what I was talking about there, history basically proved them to be right. That the war was pointless. We got out. We never won. South Vietnam fell. 55,000 people basically lost their lives for nothing. The kids were basically correct. So you got that too. Here, somehow, the kids at Columbia University think that if the Columbia University declares the fact that Israel's in the wrong, that somehow that's going to affect that war over there. That's hilarious. You know, I mean, I have heard some guy came on Fox News, a former Hamas fighter who bolted and came over to the U.S., and he said, that the Hamas considers these kids as quote-unquote useful idiots. And they are. They're idiots. There's nothing they're doing that's going to have any effect on this war at all. In 1968, this was an internal thing in the United States, and the kids wanted the Americans to get out. And we had control over that because it was our guys over there. And Nixon did finally pull them out. And he just pulled them out. You know, I mean, excuse me. Nixon is a really, really controversial figure. But, you know, the thing is, in the 1972 election, he did promise. He said, I have a plan to get these kids out of Vietnam. And he did it within a year. He did. And so we pulled out of Vietnam. And like within, 8 weeks, South Vietnam fell. You know, the North Vietnamese won. But the thing is, they were our kids. That's the thing. The people protesting were actually trying to influence people here on the mainland in our country. There's these kids who are protesting this that have no influence on this at all. None. There's nothing there they can do. They can talk to the blue in the face. Like, you know, the kids at Columbia want the Columbia University to divest of anybody who's providing the Israelis with any sort of help. In other words, their investments. Yeah, okay, fine. Does that mean that those companies are going to stop? No. It doesn't mean, it's not going to have any effect on anything. I mean, that's the stupidity of these young people is mind-boggling. And, you know, I was thinking about this today. I'm driving around, taking care of some errands. And I thought, you know, we were pretty stupid. I mean, I look back on my youth. I'm 68 years old. I was pretty goddamn fucking stupid. I was. I did a whole bunch of stupid shit. Hell, I was doing stupid shit when I was in my 40s. You know? I mean, my life is a trail of stupidity. And still, that said, I don't think I was ever as stupid as these kids. I just don't believe. They don't seem to know anything. They don't know anything about the war. They don't know anything about the history over there. All they know is, and who was this that said this? I think it was Greg Gutfeld who said the primary reason they're protesting is because it's fun. And I think he's right. It's fun, you know. Not to mention that nobody stops them from doing anything. Although it's really kind of amazing. Lately, there's some colleges now who are expelling these people. And they're kind of, that's kind of surprising. I mean, it seems like they've even had enough, you know? And the thing is, this whole thing got started by leftist professors who really, I mean, it was, what was the name? Oh, God, I'm not going to forget the guy's name. The guy who was in the Weather Underground in the 1960s. Shit. He was one of Barack Obama's friends. And he said, we will end up succeeding by indoctrinating the youth. And that's exactly what they did. And God knows no one saw it coming, especially conservatives. We didn't see it coming. And now all these kids, but there's another thing, there's a downside of this. None of these kids can think for themselves. There's no original thought here at all. These kids are truly stupid. They are uneducated. And they think that because they're going to college, especially an expensive college, they think they're educated. Nothing can be further from the truth. Now, I mean, besides the fact they don't know anything about what they're doing, I don't think anyone have any real life skills. But that doesn't stop people anymore. You know, you get a job via DEI, you know, or in the DEI department. That's actually the better job to have. Because it's like, you know, well, who's qualified to do that? Well, you know, some minority somewhere, you know. Meritocracy gets completely thrown out the window, totally. This is the terrible thing about this. Now, I become suspect when I see a minority person in a position I never did before. You know, I was just assumed that employers and the government and whoever's, you know, kind of in authority chose what they thought was the best person for the job. You know, that's, you know, now I'm suspect of everybody, especially, like I said, minority people, any minority. If you're in a job, I just wonder how you got it. You know, it's like the thing about pretty women getting hired because of their looks. I mean, that's been going on forever, you know, or at least the assumption that people think that, right? And people do. I mean, I have worked with some women who are extremely attractive and yet mentally kind of suspect, you know? And I wonder, well, how did this person get this job, you know? Now I'm starting to think this way. In other words, to me, doing this is imposing racism, and their thing is it's the opposite. They think it's the solution for it, and I totally disagree, completely, totally. So anyway, it's going to be really interesting. Bill Maher said on the show on last Friday, he said that he thinks the Democratic National Convention in August is going to be a disaster, and I do too. I also do. I think it's going to because. Now these kids want to emulate what happened. They know about what happened in the 1960s. They've heard about it. And they say, well, we can go do one better, you know. Jesus. The latest trope on this whole thing, or the latest media spin, of course, you know, I mean, I don't have to tell you about the mainstream media either. I mean, they're like we were talking about CNN earlier. I mean, they're completely in the gutter for all this. And I'm not saying the Republicans don't do this, but the Democrats are really excellent about getting the talking points out to everybody. But they got them out over the weekend. Now, if you notice, what was anti-Semite, quote-unquote, has been replaced with anti-war. The kids aren't anti-Semitic. They're anti-war. That's the thing. You know, oh, yeah, right. Tell me about it. All right, I was talking about Bill Clinton there. It made me think, you know, Hillary rose her ugly head this weekend, and she's talking about how Donald Trump wants to be a dictator. And all this. I mean, it's so sad now. It's terrible. This is the thing. Doesn't it occur to any of these people, any of them? Trump's already been president once. He did it for 4 years. None of this shit happened. None of it. None of the shit he didn't even accused him of has ever happened. And they're still doing it. They say, well, you know, if in the second term, he's going to be a dictator. Oh, shut the fuck up. And Hillary's on saying this, too. And I was really thinking about this. You know, I just went on, told you 10 minutes ago that I think Bill Clinton was a truly great president. I really do. And, yeah, he's a Democrat. Don't care. I call him the way I see him. You know, I think he was a truly great president. I think since Reagan, you had... Well, there's one thing there. Okay, you had Reagan 8 years, Bush the elder, 4 years, Clinton, 8 years, 20 years of three really solid presidents. You know, people can talk about Bush, but no, Bush, I thought until Trump, I thought Bush was the best one-term president in American history. I really thought that. Now, Trump, I think Trump trumps him. No pun intended, sorry. But yeah, you had a 20-year run then of really solid leadership. Then we go into bullshit. We got Bush, George W., bullshit. You know, we got Barack Obama, bullshit. Then we had Trump. So we had 16 years of what I would consider failed leadership, right? So I look back at Bill Clinton, and then I look at his wife who ran for president and basically did everything wrong. And, you know, this is the thing. If you can't run your campaign, you probably can't run the country. Same thing with Al Gore. Al Gore, 2000, Al Gore should have won. I mean, that okay, and you could make an argument that maybe he did. Supposedly, George W. Bush won Florida about 500 votes, you know. I mean, there's also, you know, I mean, he won the election, basically the national election by 500 votes. But it shouldn't even have been close. Gore had all the advantages to him, and he completely screwed the whole thing up, totally. First of all, he didn't want Bill Clinton to campaign for him because, well, Bill got off a sexual, scandal. You know, not to mention the fact that at no point during his entire president, no, that's not true, no, his entire second term, especially at no point during the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal, at no point did his approval rating drop below 50%. He left office with a 60% approval rating. And, of course, Gore, bless his heart, said, no, I don't want him campaigning for me. He was enormously popular, enormously popular. It's really... Al Gore did every single freaking thing wrong you could do with your campaign, and he did it. And so he deserved to lose. And then let's get to Hillary. Same damn thing. Hillary's ran her campaign terribly. And her husband, you know, this is apocryphal because we don't really know. I mean, I don't know. I never talked to anybody who actually heard this stuff. But supposedly, Bill was telling her this the entire time, that they didn't know what to do. And, you know, it's like, no, we know what we're doing. No, yeah, no, you didn't. You didn't know what you were doing. I have to tell you that in crucial points in my career, every single time I've heard somebody say, trust us, we know what we're doing, they were wrong. Every single time. I'm extremely suspect of it. I've never heard of a time where it worked out where somebody was right about that. The same with Hillary. No, we know what we're doing. No, you didn't. And, you know, and there was Bill telling her this, apparently. I mean, there seems to be, some people seem to think because these people are married that somehow there's some brilliance that rubs off from one to the other. No, there isn't. That's the thing. You could not have two starkly contrastful more. Bill was a fantastic politician, arguably the best political mind of the entire 20th century. You can go back to frickin', you know, FDR was overrated. There's no doubt about that, you know. And even Reagan, people are going to hate me for saying this, but I can make an argument that maybe even Reagan was a little overrated. He's been idolized now, you know, and he did a really good job. I'm not saying he didn't do a good job, but he's been made into more of an idol now than maybe he actually was at the time. But you could not like Clinton because he did dastardly stuff, and he did. I mean, I remember reading that John Voight became a Republican because of what Bill Clinton did with Monica Lewinsky. He was so appalled by it that he switched teams. Just because Bill's brilliant doesn't mean Hillary is too, and she isn't. And she's proven to me why she deserved to lose in 2016 since then. I mean, this woman, she goes out, she spouts the most incredible bullshit, and she's not even good at spouting it. You know, that's the thing. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I mean, lady, you know, Kat Timpf was talking about that on Fox News. Get off the stage. You're done. You're done. You know, now an amazing thing is you don't hear too much from Bill anymore. And that's because Bill, by contemporary standards, is now a conservative. And that's the terrible thing. I mean, he was the, you know, the the great liberal hope of his generation. And now he is basically, he's so centrist compared to the current crop of liberals, or leftists, I should say, that that no, he's discounted. People don't actually respect him anymore. And he knows, I think he knows that. And he's, you know, history is going to judge him very well. Now, the funny part is that I think Bill Maher, there's a few other people are trying to bring the classic traditional liberal back, and Bill Maher is doing a pretty good job of it. I mean, Bill does not seem to be afraid of speaking to power. He doesn't, especially, I mean, there's no doubt he's a liberal. I mean, he is, but he's called out the liberals and the Democratic Party a zillion times. And he just did this last weekend too. And what was it about? Oh, it was about the way they're treating Trump. And, you know, and it appears he's convinced Trump's going to win in the fall. Now, that's going to be that's really interesting. That's my prediction right now, but shit could change. I said on a program, I think it was last week, that my prediction is there's going to be some black swan event happening before now on Election Day. And everybody's predicted that, but here's my take on this. It's going to go against Biden, and it's not going to be manufactured. I think something's actually going to organically happen, basically going to knock Biden out of the race. But I'm still hearing stuff that people still think that Biden is not actually going to be nominated. You know, that they're going to, at the last minute, they're going to swap him for someone else. I don't know if this is true or not. At this point, I got to admit, I don't see how they could. I think we're too late into this, you know, but you know, that's maybe that somebody could actually talk to Biden. Actually, I mean, the guy's not physically well. He can't, like I said before, even if he was brilliant, he should step aside. He should not have run again. You know, I mean, he would do his party and the country a favor for not running, even if he was doing a good job. But the thing is, he isn't. Bill O'Reilly talks about this, but once again, I was talking about it before he was talking about it, and that is Bill. Joe Biden is going to go down as the second worst president in American history. Only James Buchanan was worse, and I don't think Buchanan's ever going to give that crown up. But no, this has been an absolute unmitigated disaster. It's amazing, just astonishing how quickly this country has gone to hell in just three short years. And you can even say two and a half. The first 6 months of Biden's presidency, nothing really happened. So, I don't know. Speaking of Trump, Mitt Romney says about Trump's character. He said, you don't pay somebody $130,000 not to have sex with them. Yeah, but here's the other thing. Trump can do the job. You couldn't. That's the thing. I mean, I don't know if Romney's bitter because he lost or if he just doesn't like Trump personally. I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but Mitt Romney would have been a poor president, and here's the reason. He can't relate to the average person. I've said this. I don't know why Trump can. That's the part that get here. I mean, I don't know what the psyche of these individuals. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Romney's never been even close to poor ever. Since the day he was born, he's been affluent. You know, I mean, he went from affluent to wildly rich. The guy's never struggled for money ever. He cannot relate to the average person in the least. He can't. Now, that's true of Trump too, but for some reason, Trump can. And I don't know if that's because he's been in the construction business and he's worked with a lot of blue collar guys. I don't know. It is a mystery of the human psyche of why some people can do this and some can't, you know, but Trump can very obviously relate to the average person. And Mitt Romney couldn't to save his life, and he tries. That's the thing. I got to give him credit. He tries to, but he can't do it. He can't. He would have been a poor president. I'm absolutely convinced of that. And so the thing is, you can talk about Trump from a moral standpoint, about grabbing pussy and all that sort of shit, you know, and all that stuff is true. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want somebody who can do the job. I was talking with a very liberal friend of mine, and what, you know, he met, I can't remember what we were talking about. He said, this stuff doesn't matter to you, does it? We're talking about the morality. So I said, no, it doesn't. It does not matter to me. No. I think being president is so hard so ungodly difficult that you just find somebody who can do it. I don't really care about their personal life. I don't care. I mean, like I said, I don't care if Biden's uncle was not eaten by cannibals. I don't care. I don't think it's important. It's not important at all. Can you do this? You know, and that would be move mountains in the federal government. Giant. It's a giant ship of a bureaucracy. Can you turn this? Can you steer it? Most people can't. You know, there have been 46 presidents, and most of them have not been able to do it. So, and I'm not even talking about recently. You go back. I mean, people were bitching about this even when Abraham Lincoln was president. He was the 16th president. And even then, people were talking about the size of the bureaucracy. And, of course, it's minuscule compared to what it is now. The really weird thing, and I'm not the only person who said this, all right, Trump is ahead in all the polls. And you have to understand that even for somebody like me who thinks that maybe there was some finagling of the 2020 election results, Trump, and this had to be pointed out to me recently, and this is I'm just going on record here. This is a very good reason why I might be wrong. But I know, isn't it unbelievable that I might be wrong? Holy shit, who would have thought that? But during the 2020 election, there's not a single point in any poll where Trump was ahead. Not once. Not one single time was Trump ever ahead. So, okay, maybe he was supposed to lose, you know, maybe he was. But now it's different. It's the opposite. Trump is leading in almost all the polls, in some cases by substantial margins. But somebody pointed out that it's really true. Considering how badly things are going, Trump should be ahead by 20 points, and he isn't. He's squeaking it. He's squeaking it, you know, which is indicative to how much people don't like this guy. And they don't. You know, Trump is very, very much disliked. But getting back to what I was saying before, you know, are you looking for a best friend or somebody to do the job? You know, Jazz Shaw, a friend, wrote an article on Hot Air today, and the article says, hold on a second. The title is, "This isn't a Tinder date. You don't have to like Trump to vote for him." And he's right. You don't. Are you going to vote for the alternative? You know, ridiculous inflation and spending money nilly-willy. Now, it's not that the Republicans haven't done this either. They have. And that's a terrible thing, too. But Biden has been so outrageous in his budgets, his spending. I mean, what, $7 billion to relieve student loans, you know, and not only that, most of those kids are already affluent. He's buying votes, you know. Are we gonna bankrupt the country? And we've come very close in only 3 years. People can't afford eggs, you know. And the thing is, and this is the reason Trump is leading, because people now look back on the Trump years and say, holy shit, that was actually pretty good. You know, at the time, he's getting pummeled, by the press and Russia collusion. And this is the other thing. How come can't Hillary give that up? First of all, she created the Russian collusion, and she's still talking to Trump about the fact that he's in bed with Putin. It's really, give it up, lady. You made it up. It's like, you know, this is so old and so tired. And you are so full of shit, you know. I mean, I wonder, do the Clintons actually get along? I mean, it's like, he is so brilliant and she is so full of crap. And as they get older, it seems to be more disparate. So here's something else that happened today. It makes me laugh. David Strom, another friend of ours who works at hotair.com, he wrote an article called "New Deadline to Save the World, 2 Years." And the reason is because the UN climate chief of climate, you know, the climate crisis that doesn't exist, you know, he said the world's going to end in 2 years. That's what he says. Yep. Now, David says in this article, and David's right, that they're doing this primarily to try to appeal, or lack of a better term, or influence the youth. And I got to admit, when I was young, when I was a teenager, I would hear this shit about how the world was going to end in 10 or 20 years. And I thought, is that really true? And my first thing, in my naive little mind, I thought, well, why would people lie about this? Well, I'll tell you why they lie about it. Money. Because the reason the UN is pushing this is that I'm not making this up. This sounds like a joke out of something out of South Park. The UN has said we can solve the climate crisis on Earth for $75 trillion. That's what they said. Now, do you know how much money that is? The entire economic output of the United States, the entirety, all of it, is $16 trillion a year. That's 200 million people are employed working, you know, and we generate $16 trillion of output a year, right? And the UN only wants $75 trillion. That's it. They can solve it. They can't solve anything, let alone the climate crisis. And I brought this up before. You know, there's a show on, I can't remember, is it Showtime, called Snowpiercer? And that show is about a train that constantly runs around the globe avoiding bad weather. And the reason is because in that the universe of that show, the U.S. government did some drastic thing to try to solve climate change, and it completely backfired, and it caused ice age. And that's exactly what would happen, right? So, I'm a climate change denier. I have scientists on the show to talk about it. I've had Matt Patrick Moore on. I've had Mark Morano on. And, okay, the first of all, the reason this got started, according to the scientists I know, it makes perfect sense, is that they had incomplete data to draw conclusions. That was the first thing. They draw conclusions off of not even wrong data, just not enough of it. Okay? All right. Secondly, Patrick Moore has brought this up famously. And the thing is, and there's a kernel of truth, as there always is to all this stuff. The temperature of the Earth is going up. It's warm. The world is warming up. It's been warming up for 300 years. But you got to think about this, and Patrick Moore brought this up. The first half of those 300 years, there was no industrialization on the planet. So there's nothing humans could have done to raise the temperature of the Earth, and yet it went up anyway. So what do you think's causing it? How about this? The sun. And how specifically that works is that, and I got to look this up again. I keep forgetting the name of this, the effect that's named after a Russian scientist, and it starts with an M. It's his name. The solar system has an effect on Earth very similar to the moon's effect on tides on Earth. And that is, especially three big bodies in the solar system, Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus. They're revolving around, and where they are in their revolutions around the sun determines a slight wobble in the Earth's revolution around the sun. And that wobble, in other words, we're slightly closer and slightly farther away from the sun at any one point in time than we're supposed to be, that wobble determines how much the world warms up if we're a little closer and cools down if we're a little colder. And then on top of that, and like Patrick Moore has brought up too, we're kind of supposed to be in another ice age. In other words, the world is supposed to be getting colder. So there's if it wasn't for the wobble, we probably wouldn't. And I can talk about this forever. CO2 is not pollution. Okay, CO2 is an integral part of life on Earth, and we need it. And actually, right now we're on the low side. That's the amazing thing. So, once again, a kernel of truth: CO2 doesn't matter. Pollution, yeah, pollution's terrible. You know, yeah, cars spit out soot. It goes in the air, and that's awful. That's absolutely awful. Do we want a dirty planet? No, we don't. See, that's the kernel of truth here. We don't want a dirty planet. And that they're right. But CO2 has nothing to do with it. Nothing. As a matter of fact, Moore says, now this is a theory, there's no confirmation of this, but he says a lot of scientists buy this, that the thing with CO2 and rising temperatures is that the cause and effect is completely wrong. If you ask the climate change people, they say that increased CO2 leads to higher temperatures on Earth. Moore says it's actually the opposite. Higher temperatures leads to more CO2. He says they've got the cause and effect completely wrong. So, and that's a theory. Not everyone buys that, but there are quite a few scientists that buy it. So at any rate, I could talk about that forever. Bullshit, in other words. So they're trying to, people are starting to get on to the fact that it's all just, it's gloom and doom fear-mongering, and that's why people are ignoring it. And so now, and as a matter of fact, I think I'm going to end, well, I'm not going to end with this because I got one story I got to tell you about. Excuse me. I got an itch. GM, General Motors, released their first quarter earnings today. They're way up. And why are they way up? Because they've completely abandoned electric cars. That's why. That they started in the last quarter of last year, and they started building Silverado trucks that are just complete. The people are buying gas guzzlers again. That's what it comes down to. It's like, and they are doing business hand over fist. I mean, they're completely blowing out profits and everything, and people are buying the cars up as fast as they can make them, and the trucks especially. Because they concluded, rightly so, that this whole thing about auto industry had been convinced by these stupid frickin' bureaucrats that there would actually be a market for electric cars. And there was for a while. But the thing is, basically, everybody who wanted one has already bought one. That's basically the deal. And on top of that, especially here in Minnesota, where if you live in a northern climate, these cars don't work for shit. Now, I'm astonished how many, I mean, Minneapolis is a pretty affluent city. You know, there's quite a few Teslas around here. But you're kind of, I'm not saying you're nuts to buy a Tesla. I'm not. But yeah, it's not optimal. I mean, if you live in like California or Scottsdale, Arizona or Texas, you can get away with driving one of these cars pretty well. I mean, you know, it's like, it depends on what you're using it for. But, you know, they're easy to charge, that sort of thing. But here up north, especially if the temperatures get up as low as they do here, these batteries sometimes will only hold half the charge they're supposed to. So, and then on top of that, it's just finding a charging station if you're going across the country. A friend of mine, this is about 2-3 years ago now, and actually I'm friends with her. This is her husband. I know the guy, but I'm friends with her. Her husband, she flew here to see her, to see some family, and he decided they owned a Tesla, and he said, I'm going to try driving this across the country. So he drove from Palo Alto to Minneapolis, and he wanted to see literally if he could do it. Now, those Teslas have these, you know, they have a giant, basically flat screen iPad control panel in the middle. And one of the things that Tesla does, the Tesla company, is they will put a map that has every Tesla charging station in the United States marked on it. And the map is apparently pretty accurate. It works. And so my friend told me that he did have to drive out of his way a couple times to get the car charged. But he showed up at the charging station, and it was there, and it worked, and he got here. So, I mean, but the thing is, he came from Palo Alto, California, where, and he came here during the summer. So, you know, nice weather all along. But battery, we still haven't really mastered the battery technology. This is our biggest problem with electricity, is we can generate it. We still don't know how to store it well. You know, one thing about the windmills, and especially the windmills, and don't get me started on that, the windmills, that's bullshit. That's a stupid way to generate electricity. It really is. They're inefficient. They don't always spin. You know, people talking about, you know, even solar panels only work in the day, duh, but they do work. And also, here's a misnomer. It doesn't matter whether it's cloudy or not. The rays that the solar panel runs on penetrate the clouds, so as long as it's daylight, the solar panels are working. But the thing is, there's no way you can store that electricity. Whereas like a nuclear power plant or even a coal burning plant, if you're running it right, runs 24 hours a day. So if you don't store the electricity, you don't need it, it just dissipates, right? So, but we really don't know how to store electrical power yet. We're in the nascent stages of it. The batteries are lithium. They work. There was a breakthrough study that was done just recently that said somebody now thinks they can design a battery that simply works off water that would work really well or would work just as good as a lithium battery or it does. And if that's the case, I mean, that's a breakthrough thing. And apparently it is. They're still going to do some more testing. But, okay, let me see. I've been talking for a while. Holy shit. It's good. It's a talk show. All right, I'm going to leave you with this. So this was an article by a guy named, Dennis Hoogstraten, I think, for he's kind of a UFO guy for Outkick.com. So he wrote an article that he says that the government, through declassified governments, the government is admitting now that it had a UFO program called Kona Blue that was set up to reverse engineer crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. Got it? Which is what I've been talking about for like years and years and years. Now, here's the funny part. They didn't reverse engineer any crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft because they say they couldn't find any. That's the biggest fucking bunch of bullshit ever. Ever. They're just covering their tracks here. That's bullshit. It's like, so now, okay, first of all, they said, we don't know what you're talking about. Now they've said, well, yes, we had a program, but we never implemented it because we couldn't find any spacecraft. You just wait. In about a year, they're going to come out and say, oh, yeah, we found a couple. they're just dripping this out, you know? And so, and I got to bring this up again. If there's crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft, that means there's extraterrestrials, you know? Although Jazz Shaw talked about this the last time he was on the show, and I think I mentioned earlier, where I'm working with him, we're going to put together kind of a UFO panel to discuss some of this stuff. But David Grush, the guy who appeared before Congress and talked about the non-human entities, you know, Jazz brought this up, and I noticed this too, but it's really important that I think more than one of us noticed. Grush has never talked about extraterrestrials. He always corrects people and says, no, non-human. And so what's that all about? Well, supposedly, now this is rumor here. So, you know, I don't got this. I'm telling you what I hear. That in New York City, Grush met with like 60 very prominent Americans, not all necessarily government, like suppose like Jeff Bezos types. I don't know if Bezos himself was there, you know, or Bill Gates types, you know, very, very prominent Americans. He met with 60 of them in an apartment on Park Avenue in New York City, supposedly. And he explained to them that these extraterrestrials are actually what they're calling interdimensional. In other words, they're not necessarily from another planet. As a matter of fact, they might actually be here living with us on Earth, but we can't see them because they live in a completely different dimensional environment. Which is, and the problem with that is now, like, I'm taking the show full circle now. What I was talking about at the beginning, and that is, you're talking about tinfoil hat shit. You know, that's the thing. There's certain, increments are made slowly, and then there's a question of whether he's right or not. You know, I mean, I've been saying forever that we have crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft, so therefore there's extraterrestrial. And the other thing is, the universe is so vast. Hell, our galaxy, hell, even with what did I find out? There's something like 50 or 60 planets, even within 50 light years of Earth, which is right in the neighborhood, that could support human life, something like that. They've only discovered these things in the last 20 years. I'm under the impression now they find several planets a day. It's astonishing. Once they got figured out how to do it, they threw the floodgates open. But, you know, what Grush is talking about is very hard for people to accept about the fact that, you know, okay, so we're sharing a space based on gravity, and that's actually the key there, because gravity can warp time and space. And so there's another civilization here on Earth that we literally can't see. No, well, people can't grasp that. That sounds nuts. It does. So who knows, you know? I'd say for a certainty, that there are also extraterrestrials, you know, people living on other planets that are coming here. So those crashed spacecraft do exist. because I've said this before, you're not talking about one civilization. You're talking about a whole bunch of civilizations, anywhere from, you know, 200 years to 100,000 years ahead of us. I mean, my prediction, I've said this before, that by the end of the century, we'll be flying faster than the speed of light. I think it'll actually happen before 2070, you know. I mean, I'm probably not going to be around to see it. You know, I'll be 100 in 2055, and I probably won't make that. Although my mother in 3 months is going to celebrate her 100th birthday, and she still lives on her own. She's not living in a nursing home or any of that shit. So I have very good genes for that. And my father died at 86, but he was relatively young for his family, too. So I don't know. I have no idea. But I'm probably not going to make 2070. So, but that's my prediction, that by the end of the century, for sure, and probably by 2070, we'll be flying faster than the speed of light. So, there you go, folks, you know. So anyway, this is really interesting. The government said, oh, there are no UFOs. And they said, oh, yeah, the Navy's flying around UFOs all the time, you know. Now they're saying, no, there were no crash extraterrestrial spacecraft. Oh, but we did set up a study, a group to study them, but we never found any. What the bullshit? What the, you know, it's like the thing is, the single most searched for document on the FBI Vault archive website is the memo sent from, I can't remember, it was Kansas, sent back to the Home Office, and it's a 4-page memo that basically says, well, we have this crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft and these 3 dead aliens. What do you want us to do with them? And the FBI said, oh, it was just a complete misunderstanding. It's all bullshit. No, it wasn't. What are they, clowns? These agents, did they mistake clowns for extraterrestrials? I mean, shit. What are you talking about? How do you write something like that? And just, oh, it's just an error. Oh, my God. Okay, so I'm calling it a night. Tomorrow, Bruce Solheim is here. We're going to ask, his book is called We Are the Aliens, and we're going to talk to him about him talking to aliens. On Thursday, Kathleen Martin, she's coming on. We're going to talk to her. Her latest book is called Forbidden Knowledge. As a matter of fact, it's actually an update. The book came out in 2022, and she updated it a year later to add stuff. So I read the latest copy. That's her latest book. She's written with Sam Freeman and alone. She's written, I think, at least a dozen books, I think. She's also, there's a book I'm really interested in talking about. She also wrote a book called Science with Sam Freeman. The book's called Science Was Wrong. It's about all the times since the start of the 20th century, the scientists have been completely wrong about shit. And it's fascinating because it happened a lot of times. So if you're thinking I'm just a climate change denier here, I don't know, honey. You know, it's like, I got a few people on my side. So, anyway, I'm Jim Peters. I want to thank you for watching. I want to thank you for listening on Blog Talk Radio. You guys didn't call tonight. Should have called. Good time. Did you see I talked for 90 minutes? When you, I mean, fuck. What, like, how many straight guys can do that? Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, we'll see you tomorrow night. Bruce Solheim's here. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.